All right, so this week we are discussing Blade Runner 2049. This is the sequel to the film we reviewed last week, of course. It's set 30 years in the future, starring Ryan Gosling, Harrison Ford, Ana de Armas, Robin Wright. We've got Dave Bautista in there. We've got Jared Leto, and there's a lot of other names. It's a visually stunning film, and it's accompanied by music done by Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wallefish. So you know it's going to be just a spectacle. I'm really excited to discuss this.
But Zach, is it good?
We're going to find out.
We have a guest today, don't we?
We do.
Let's do it.
But is it good podcast? Yeah.
Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to But Is It Good? Once again, I am your host, Hunter Callahan.
And I am your host, Zach Olson. And we have a guest today, if you didn't catch on to that during the intro.
Yes.
Yeah, my name's Corey Grispo, and I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah, Corey. So, real quick, Corey, me and Corey work together. You're currently repping the Between Pixels hoodie. I like it.
Yeah, always have to rep the brand.
Yep. We've been on the same team. You've been there for what, 2 years yet?
Yeah, November will be 2 years.
2 years. We've had a lot of fun, a lot of adventures. We both died in Chicago, and we've been in purgatory ever since. It's an inside joke.
We did, yeah. That was the Uber trip to hell.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually, you know what? I should ask that right out the gate. What's the PG rating of this?
Say whatever you want.
Okay, cool.
I drop F-bombs. Hunter usually says heck. And, you know, he tries to keep it. It's like half PG and then half just like X rated over here. So whatever
you want to do. I think last time one of my quotes was, I'm a slut for peanut butter. That was said last
time.
That
was for the Peanut Butter Falcon, right?
Yeah. Oh, actually, that's actually a great movie. But no, yeah, Corey is a camera whiz. You're a DP first, I believe, right? You've shot some cool stuff. You're doing a short film. Is it your short film?
Yeah,
or you shooting
I would say director more than DP.
Nice.
Is the goal. You know, yep. It's easier to get work as a DP, but as soon as I can convince people to pay me to direct, then I'll be doing that.
I've been on a few work trips. I think I'm two in a row where I've come back and I've got a message from Corey saying, hey, this is wrong. We need to fix this.
It's just, we need to dedicate a COTY camera so it can just stay the correct setting.
Yes.
So that we
helpful.
Don't have people change it when it's sent out, because then it just gets all mixed up and we get stuff back in 50 frames. Who knows?
Yep. We shot some stuff in slow motion once, but we're excited to have you. Yeah, that's a true story. I did like half of one in slow motion. One of those was my fault. We'll have to get Luke on here and talk about that too.
True.
But anyway, Corey, thanks for doing this. We're doing one of your favorite films.
Yes. Yeah, this was a huge one for me. I remember I was in film school when this came out, I was still in film school. And it was, I remember I hadn't seen the original yet. And when this was announced, so I was like, all right, I got to get around to seeing the original first. And then I can be ready to go see this next one. And I watched it. And I remember at the end of it being like, there's no way this new one's better. There's no way. And then I was absolutely blown away. And this started my love affair for Denis. He's my favorite. I love him.
I
was just calling him Denis for this because I cannot. Yeah. I say his last name different every time.
When we did Dune, we made a whole thing out of how to pronounce his name. It was like Denis Villeneuve. Or something.
Yeah.
Denis sounds good.
Perfect.
Well, on that, you can. We can go ahead and jump right in. We can go on and on about how... Zach, I hope you're well. I know I haven't asked that yet, but I hope you're good.
I'm good. Are you good, Hunter?
Good. I'm good. Got back from my cousin's wedding today, so we had a good time. Anyway, we can jump right in. Corey, since you kind of already gave a hit, you can start us off again. This is spoiler free in case anybody hasn't seen it. I know it's a few years old, but spoiler free. First reactions, whether it be the first time you saw it or when you recently watched it, first thoughts of 2049.
Yeah, man. I remember walking out of that theater and being like, I know being a philosopher isn't really a job anymore, but if it was, I think they'd be directors. Because that was like yeah. such a huge movie for me, where I walked out being like, what does it mean to be a human and all this stuff. It was great. It was very introspective. I don't know, you got to it makes you think about a lot of things. It was great.
Yeah. Zach, you just watched it again today for the second time,
maybe the third time, but I will say that, you know, when I saw it in theaters back in 2017.
Yeah, I think we saw it together.
Yeah, I think we did, and I may have seen it another time that year, but there's been a gap between those viewings and this viewing, to the point where there were a lot of plot points that I had just completely forgotten, so it was kind of like a fresh viewing in that sense. And it's visually stunning. It raises a lot of philosophical questions, just like the first one. I think it raises different questions than the first one, and I think when you look at like the subject matter, the book that it's based on, I think it's getting a little further away from that, you know? But it also, I have a few questions. I was texting Hunter today, some like loose ends. And I was like, I'm not sure how this fits. And he was like, ask Corey. So I'm excited to ask you, Corey, to answer a couple of questions, but we'll get into that once we get through all the spoiler, like the spoiler part. But yeah, I mean, it was very apparent to me. Like, I see a lot of similar. I know Denis has done a bunch of stuff, but there were a lot of similarities in like framing and just like these long like meditative shots between this and Dune. Like, it was very apparent that like Dune was like the direct evolution from this, right? In terms of how it's filmed. Those are my first impressions, Hunter. it's you.
Yeah. I actually, when I watched it back, I had that same thought about Dune, where I was like, there was some, I think a lot of the like, the landscape shots of showing LA or whatever, and then it, with the music, I was like, yo, this feels like Dune. I saw it, so this is actually only my second time watching this. So I saw it with you, Zach, when it came out and was blown away, and then watched it again earlier this week and was blown away again. I really love this movie. It's also like the perfect storm for me, because like I love Ryan Gosling and I love Harrison Ford. So like I was like, and I love.
He didn't want to mention Jared Leto.
I do like Jared Leto. I like him. I like him as an actor. I've heard.
I'm glad he's like such a minor part. Like, he does play a big role, but as like a he's more of like a background entity. Yeah, exactly. Right. He more so hands it off to Love, and she takes care of that stuff.
But I will say, because also like I'm a sucker for like the movies that are just like silence, you know, like a very like quiet kind of performance. And I really love it. I think it's interesting. I said last week when we did Blade Runner that when I rewatched Blade Runner, I loved Blade Runner a lot more than I realized. Mm-hmm. Like, so when I first saw Blade Runner, it was like here. When I watched it again, it was like here. Mm-hmm. I will say when I watched 2049, it was here. And when I watched it again, it was still kind of here. So it was interesting that I didn't have some new profound, like, oh, wow, this is incredible. But I still like loved it. I actually don't know which one I like more. I really love 2049. I just the whole concept of like this to me goes beyond what does it mean to be human, and it's also just like what does it mean to like be alive, you know, like this, which I know Blade Runner still talks about that, but I love the kind of silent turmoil that Kay kind of goes through and how that's kind of shown. I think it's great. I love it. Visually, it's incredible, which of all of Denis' films are really, really
well, that goes, you know, amazing. Also to Deakins, who's the best to ever do it. Unbelievable. Yeah. Finally won his Oscar for cinematography for this movie after being shunned from that category for forever. Or not shunned, but like nominated and lost like 12 times or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one is just, this world feels, like Blade Runner's world feels very lived in, but this one feels like worn out lived in a good way. Does that make sense? Where it's like, I don't know, maybe it's because it's a sequel. Like, I think it's interesting that the world that Ridley Scott gave us in Blade Runner was already surprising enough, but then they weren't afraid to say, it's been 30 years, here's even more shit's happened. Like, they go to different locations, and you're like, well, this really fell apart. This is really, like, San Diego is like a dump, literally.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like a dump. So I just think it's fascinating. I think the whole world of it is really incredible. But that's kind of where I was first watch. So Corey, it's time for a movie in a minute.
Okay.
And as is customary for the guests, we ask that you do it if you are up to the challenge.
Yeah. Let me, get my stopwatch out here, 'cause I will go over.
Yes. The rule is you have 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. You can't, you don't get any points for going faster. You got to use all 60 seconds.
Okay.
And just do your best. I mean, good luck. That's kind of, we just kind of throw you to the wolves.
Alrighty. Starting.
Yeah. So you can just count it down. 3, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1. And then you can start.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Okay. So 2049 is about, Officer K, who is a replicant that is also a Blade Runner. So he's sent to hunt down old replicants that are, need to be retired, which means killed. He himself is a replicant, which will come into play later. He discovers, while retiring a replicant, a baby born from, well, the remains of a baby born from a replicant, which is a huge issue because that shouldn't be possible. So he goes on this whole mission to figure out who this baby is, and he sort of, for a time, thinks it's him. He's led to believe that it's him because he's got memories that are real, which he shouldn't have as a replicant, which leads him to run into Deckard, who he believes to be his dad. And then they go on this whole mission of like, all right, you need to make sure Deckard doesn't fall into Wallace's hands, because then they can start to create more replicants that can reproduce. That is a minute, 0.62 seconds.
Perfect. Amazing.
That'll work.
That
it was good.
That poor work of charm.
I didn't. You know, I got about halfway through it, and I was like, shit, does this include spoilers or not?
No, yeah, yeah.
It's definitely, at this point, spoilers are free game. Yeah, cool. It's just when we give our first impressions, we want to, I don't even know why we started doing that, honestly, but we give spoiler-free first impressions and then go straight into spoilers. So
just in case.
I mean, works. For people that are really interested in watching, like, 10 minutes of a podcast and then dipping out.
Well, and they might find something interesting, and they're like, oh, I haven't seen this. I don't want it spoiled for me. Let's go watch the movie and then come back and subscribe.
And subscribe and follow and share.
Subscribe, follow.
That's right.
I actually messed up. I meant to, when we did first impressions, I meant to ask you your first impression on The Last Jedi and why it's the greatest Star Wars movie ever made.
Actually just shared. Oh, you commented on it. I just shared the story about it.
Oh, yeah.
That movie, unfortunately, lives rent-free in my head for not good reasons.
We'll have to have you back when we do Star Wars. We haven't done any Star Wars movies yet.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't.
Okay, well, it's that time, and we are making really good time, so we got plenty of time to dive in. How do you want to approach it? Do you want to go through the movie? Zach, do you want to just bombard us with your questions? Do you want to...
My questions are almost exclusively with the conclusion and like the last third of the movie. Mm. So I don't want to start with my questions because, you know, I just don't think that would. Corey, would you like to go chronologically or would you like to like follow one plot line and then follow another? Or like how would you like to approach
it? We can go chronologically. That sounds good.
Okay. Okay.
Let's do the opening. Apparently that was the storyboarded based off of the original storyboards for Blade Runner. There's like a scene that was supposed to show how Deckard was like some ruthless killer, and it was somebody who was like making tea or whatever. I learned that. That was really interesting. What do you guys think of Bautista and that whole sequence and realizing that like Kay's a replicant Blade Runner?
Yeah, it was. Okay, so it's clear to me because one, Bautista is huge. And two, like, it's clear that he's a replicant because someone is going to his home and he's just like this humble farmer, right? So we know from the first movie that replicants are strong as hell. And this is a Bautista replicant, so you'd think that he would just be able to rip him in half. So it was interesting that he essentially let Kay win, right? Like, that was already, like, an intriguing plot point to me because, like, to me, he could have ripped him in half, like, quite literally. But he didn't, and he already, like, implants that seed of, like, you know, what's he say about, like, seeing a miracle?
Yeah, he's like,
he said the new replicants are happily scraping the shit because they haven't seen a miracle.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back when I first saw it. There was some. Yeah, it's that first line of like, what'd you say, like, how does it feel like killing your own kind? And you see the like the coldness of Kay because he's like, my kind don't run. So he doesn't even associate himself with, he's a Nexus 8, is Bautista, right? Nexus 8?
Yes.
Yeah. So like he's that far, like, I'm not one of you. You know?
Is Kay, so Kay is a line that, so The previous corporation is like done because there were too many rebellions, and then Wallace Tyrell. Like finds the Tyrell Corporation. Thank you. Wallace finds the like records and creates replicants that are docile. Are they still a Nexus line? Like is Kay like a Nexus 9 or is it like a different line? Do either of y'all know?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. All I know is that. Wallace bought the rights or like the designs and all that for replicants from Tyrell, but that's all I know. That's a good question.
That's how he has all the old
but
records,
I would imagine,
like even the pre-blackout stuff, right?
Yes, because he buys that, and then he mentions later when you see the replicant being born, and then he goes and like you don't have a uterus or whatever, it can't reproduce, so he like slices it open. Yeah. He makes some offhanded remark about one final like mystery or secret that Tyrell had, which is reproduction. So I think I would imagine these are Nexus 8s that he's trying to improve because that seems like the last of the replicants that Tyrell made and he's trying to improve on that. I don't know. That's what I'd imagine.
Is it implied that, and we're already kind of going off tangents, but is it implied that Rachel is... like was like a one-off, right? So in Blade Runner, he says like she's an experiment.
Yeah, I did a little bit of just like reading up on like Rachel's story specifically, and it said that she's a Nexus 7. So whereas we had Nexus 6 were like the main like antagonist / protagonist, like however you want to see it from the first one. And then Dave Bautista, and it seems like this underground cadre of like freedom fighters are all Nexus 8s, and like the majority of the indefinite lifespan, whatever it's called, where they don't have like a timer on their life. Yeah. These replicants are Nexus 8 in this film, but Rachel was a Nexus 7, is what I had found in my research.
Do the 8s grow up, or are they just like born adults with an open-ended lifespan?
I think they're born adults.
I think the latter, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. No, I loved seeing the Bautista fight, but I guess also realizing that Kay, like, I guess for me, this is kind of a dumb thing to say, but I realized that he was a replicant when he could take the hits.
The beating?
And not get, like, not his head didn't explode.
Right.
But, yeah, I was going to say something, but I forgot what it was. I think it's about the bones. I forgot. Continue.
Was Bautista... Sorry, this is just curiosity at this point. Was Bautista, like, marketed with the film, or was it, like, a surprise that he was in it? Like,
I think it was a surprise. They released three short films coming up to the movie, and one of them starred Bautista, I think, walking through some shop. They're all called, like, Blade Runner, like, like 2034, like their dates leading up until this year. I don't remember the name of the one he was in, but there is one about him.
Okay. I guess I'm trying to remember if this was like a Bryan Cranston in Godzilla situation where it was marketed that he's in the film and then like 10 minutes in, you know.
He dies. I don't think so. I don't think he was.
Okay.
This was actually the first time that I saw him in something that wasn't silly.
Which was shocking.
I know now like he wants to do that more and he's a bit in Dune and stuff. What was I going to say? I think, so then he finds the bones, right? Rachel's bones.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, well. What happens next? He takes the bones
He finds the tree with the flowers. The bones aren't really uncovered until later because she sends the dish.
That's true, 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 true. He finds that there's something in there with his little drone or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we meet, what's Robin Wright's name in the movie? I can't remember. Madam
Joshi?
Yeah.
Joshi. That's it.
Lieutenant Joshi.
Which she's never referred to as. The only reason I know that is because of the subtitles. If you turn on closed captioning, it's just like, there it is.
Yeah, I just say Madam. And then we see the new like baseline test, which I thought was super fascinating.
Given like trigger words and he has to repeat those regardless of the question that's asked or whatever said directly before that. Just to make sure he's like level, I guess.
Yeah. So it was based because the first one has the, what's it called? Like Voight-Kampff test or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the new, it's like baseline test. I loved how like he's seen, I guess, and treated. I guess I didn't love it, but like as a replicant Blade Runner. Like, even amongst the police force, he's, like, sort of seen as this, like, outsider. I don't know if that's
Well, it's brutal, too. It's even, like, there's that level where they're, like, yelling at him in the hallway. But then there's later in the movie where they're, like, go retire this this kid. Go get rid of all traces of it. And he goes, well, I've never killed something that's been born. And he goes, to be born is to have a soul.
Yeah.
And then Madam goes, you've been getting on fine without one. And it's just out of left field, totally brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, just cuts him down. But it's a very strange dynamic.
Yeah.
She's cold because at another point earlier, or maybe it's the same scene where he says that and she says, are you refusing an order? And he just sort of like twitches and says like, I wasn't aware that was an option.
She
looks at him. She's like, good, you know? But she does show some compassion, I think. Cause later on when he's like way off his baseline, which maybe it's just because he got the job done, or at least he told her that he did that she grants him that. Cause like, my assumption is that if you're off your baseline like that, you just get retired on the spot. But she like lets him leave the building.
Well, she says like, I can get you out of the building alive. Like, I think she uses 2 weeks. Like that word.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Because there's this whole, like one of the whole themes, I guess too, is because Wallace mentions it, is he says something like, we've lost our stomach for like slave labor, essentially.
I hated Jared Leto playing Wallace. I hated Wallace. Like I hated those scenes, which good job, right? But
yeah, I mean, he definitely comes across as this like self-important, narcissistic, which is funny because I was watching him and I think when Leto did like Dallas Buyers Club. People were like, oh, wow, he's really great. Which, mind you, he is great in that movie. But then, like, you know, Joker happened and stuff. And then this happened. And I know he's doing Tron Legacy. But when he was...
Don't forget Morbius.
I'm so upset about Tron. I've been waiting for a sequel.
and then that happens. Jared Leto.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, it's funny because I was watching him in this movie. And I was like... Does he think he's still Joker? Like the way he like moves his head. You know what I mean? Where I was like,
yeah, he took a very strange approach to being blind. Cause I don't know any blind people that move like that.
Well,
and it's funny too, because I'd imagine that was hell to cut together, because he's doing like that move, and they've got to stitch it together. It's
right.
Like, how do you do that consistently between takes?
Well, what's funny is that his character is blind. In fact, you know, it's a kind of a hot topic talking about method acting, but like, he had to be guided around set because he would, I guess, cover his eyes to be blind.
Oh, I think he put contacts in that blocked out his yeah, vision. So he like, yeah.
But in the movie, his character can see with the help of those little drone things.
Mm-hmm.
So it is funny that which I guess maybe in those scenes, I have to rewatch, maybe he's not doing all the movements. But it's funny to be like, you can't actually see in this scene, you're not blind. You know what I mean?
Right.
I had a point I was gonna make, but I forgot what it was. What were we talking about before this? I went off on a tangent about Wallace. Oh, shit.
Well,
I don't remember.
Not to jump ahead, but before mm-hmm. I forget it, we were gonna talk about, I want to know what you guys think about this line in the movie, because there's a lot of debate about it. They say when Deckard is meeting with Wallace, he says, "Designed to do nothing more or nothing short of fall for her right then," which is super interesting, because some people are like, so Deckard's designed, or... how I interpret it was that Rachel was designed for him, because his next line is, that is, if you were designed. So they leave it ambiguous, which I kind of like. I didn't want the sequel to come in and be like, all right, here's every answer we didn't give you in the first yeah, one. Sure. It's like sitting down with the director and asking him questions. I'm happy it wasn't that.
Well, so... If I'm not mistaken, Harrison Ford says Deckard is human, and I think Ridley Scott says he's a replicant. I think either one of those is interesting. I think I think he's human. I think we talked about this briefly last week, Zach, and I think I was saying that I think he's human. But I think to a degree, I've heard something about this, about how it actually relates back to the first one, about how Rachel was designed for him. And I think I could be totally off base with this. So if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Somebody can
you're way off baseline.
Tell me that. Yeah, I'm way off baseline. There's some deleted scene or some scene that was going to be in it in the original that showed that Tyrell was a replicant. And that that Tyrell was dead. There was some scene that either was shot and not put in or never shot that was going to show Tyrell's like tomb. And mm-hmm. then that implies that the Tyrell that we see is a replicant, which could have been that.
The original is such a like crazy movie to pull evidence from, because I went through unbelievable amount of takes, or not takes, cuts. So like the final cut being the actual director's cut, not the director's cut. I think that's the only thing you can go, like, I don't know. It's interesting going off of like deleted scenes, because I feel like you can film that and then get to the final cut and be like, I don't think this fits, and cut it out and be like, this isn't good for the story. But then people find out about it and they're like, oh, Tyrell is not real. And it's like, well, if it wasn't in the cut, it's not
true
canon.
True. Yeah, it's fair.
Zach, what do you think? Do you think that she was designed for him, or do you think that
makes more sense to me? That so when I first heard the line, I took it as Deckard was designed for that moment, that interaction, and I really disliked that, because in the debate between him being a replicant or a human, I think it makes more sense for him to be human based mm-hmm. on like the story in the original film and like what happened to the original film, but also the fact that like if he was like a Nexus 5 or something, because he's been around for a little while, and then he's able to reproduce with her, that wouldn't really make sense to me. So anyways, side tangent gone. It makes sense for Rachel to have been designed for him within the context of the first movie, because the second Deckard gets there, right, he's like do the test on her. I want you to do the test on her. So it seems like he's like trying to like pair them up in a way. Mm-hmm. Like that lines up better for me. I don't know if that's actuality or if that was just Wallace, if that was just Jared Leto being a dick. I'm not sure. And I do like the ambiguity. But that makes more sense than Deckard was designed to me personally.
Well, it's interesting because at that part, you know, and again, I know that we're skipping ahead, but he brings Rachel, quote unquote, Rachel out again.
Was that meant to kind of look like Rachel, but not really look like Rachel? Because it like the face shape was off, the voice was off, and he even says like she had green eyes.
Yeah,
you know. But it was like more off than I thought it would have been, if that makes sense.
Maybe, yeah. I think I took it as it was supposed to be her, but it still, I think, works in the story where it's like not quite.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you can't replicate that.
Yeah, this is what I love about these movies is that, let's say that Rachel was designed for Deckard to fall for her, right? Her purpose was to make him fall in love with her. I think this movie is interesting because it's like, okay, well, does that matter to Deckard? You know what I mean? Like, is mm-hmm. he going to be like, oh, it's all fake? Was it to him? Is it still, like, she still ran away with him? They had a child together. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's why I think these movies are interesting. It's where it's like, if Kay's like, I'm made for one thing, but I guess does that make everything less real to him? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't think... It would have the impact, like if I was in Deckard's position, I don't think it would have the impact that Wallace thought it would. Like you said, it doesn't take anything away from Deckard's story, I don't think. And if anything, it could be just to test the implications, not just that replicants have emotion, but that they can like spur certain emotions in others, which I guess they did have like pleasure models back then too. But you see, it's a different thing, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Does what I'm saying make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I think if they had, it's sort of like, I don't think they have as much control over them as they like to think. Because obviously Roy and his crew go rogue in the first one, and then he's still retiring replicants in the second one. So clearly they have like their free will and ability to think and whatnot. So... the idea that she was manufactured just to be like the perfect partner for him, I don't think tracks. I think her being manufactured to be like him, for to be attracted to her in the first place, yeah, that makes sense. But emotionally, she comes over to his place and has like an existential crisis when she finds out she's a replicant, and she's like, I don't know where I begin and Tyrell's granddaughter ends and whatnot. So
yeah.
They definitely made those decisions under their own free will. But as far as designing her physically for him, I think that's probably what they're alluding to.
Yeah. You know what's funny to me?
That makes a lot of sense.
I think, and this is across both movies, is where it's like, because like the biggest thing is like they're like replicants can't have empathy. They don't have the emotional maturity to have empathy and like whatever. And I watched the first one and I'm like, do they not watch replicants? Because they very openly have emotions and like heartbroken and
so I thought the whole thing, like the whole conflict in the first movie that Tyrell talks about, is that once replicants start to form memories, they start to form emotion, and that's when they realize what they are and they start freaking the fuck out. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to me, and that he was experimenting with giving like prior memories so they don't figure it out as quickly. But he said that brings in the risk of like higher levels of emotion because they have more experience to pull from. So it's interesting in this film, it's not explained, and I guess it doesn't really need to be explained, but I'm curious how, like, what is done to make the more recent replicants docile, if they have that emotion and if they're able to reason and think, which I guess even with that like inhibitor, whatever's going on, Kay still sort of defects, right? Once he realizes what's going on. But it makes me wonder if the main issue was like memory and emotion in the first film, and yet all of the like Nexus 9 replicants have memory and seemingly emotion. Like what did Wallace do to like bridge that gap, if that makes sense?
Well, I think that's sort of mentioned in 2049 with Deckard's daughter. She mentions Wallace needs my expertise or my work to maintain a stable product, where she gives like good memories for these, for them to have, I think, human responses. This is the word she uses. But
right.
I think it probably comes down to those memories and whatnot. Because I think in the first one, it's really interesting how when Roy and, oh my God, I'm forget the other one's name.
Pris?
Yes, Pris. When they're at the guy that plays chess with Tyrell, when they're at his place.
J.F. Sebastian?
Yes. Yeah. When they're at his place, they like meet up and hardcore make out like immediately, which is super funny to like, they're 4 years old, right? They're just figuring out emotions. So like, this is how this works. And you just, it wasn't like a nice to see you. It was like a face smashing together. And then they're like, so you can see even in that how almost infant they are in their emotional like stages. They're just sort of like figuring out how everything works.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is like that was mentioned. I think we actually talked about that briefly last time, Zach, and it brings up a really strange question about Rachel, where it's like emotionally she's a child. You know what I mean?
Right. Which Rachel was given like childhood memories, so maybe she's
maybe that's a good point.
You know, she's more emotionally advanced.
Do we know if love has memories?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't think it's ever mentioned because she is like. In this movie, she's kind of the one that, I guess, behaves as you would think they're, quote-unquote, supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she, to me, is one that has, like, no empathy, no emotion. Not like, she's getting her nails done and blowing people up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that kind of stuff.
Well, even at the end, she stabs Kay, kisses him with covered in blood, and she's like, I'm the best one, and then goes back to get Deckard. So there's very clearly a difference between them. I just don't know what that would be. It's a good idea that it could maybe be a lack of memories or any sort of childhood. She's just made to obey.
Right.
Sorry, I'm doing my
can I yeah, you're just shoving them in your mouth. I have to say, it was kind of out of left field for me. Like, it was great. I thought it was hilarious. But I thought that Love's role was just like this cold, calculating, like administrative individual. And then she knows fucking martial arts. And she's just like beating the shit out of people. It kind of caught me off guard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all felt that or if y'all expected that.
I don't even remember.
Well, Pris in the first one is doing fucking backflips across the hallways. So I feel like they're all.
Yeah.
And she was like some. I don't know if she was a pleasure. I like think the other one that died. Yeah, she was like a minor. So like she's all of a sudden acrobatic and whatnot. So
that's a good point.
Pris is wild because there's a few little things where like she's just so socially awkward. You know what I mean? Like, and that kiss with when she kisses Kay to me was like she watches Wallace kiss the replicant that he kills, and it's like she's just trying to be him. Not like be him, but like I think she even says like, what does he say to her? Where he's like, he's like, oh, he named you. You must be special. And she's like, I'm here for Mr. Wallace. Well, so all she is like.
Sorry. Even when Wallace leaves the room after killing that replicant and then he says to Love, like, you like really are the best angel of them all. So she totally mirrors that interaction in the last scene with Kay, where she kisses him and then says, I'm the best one. It's like exactly the same.
After delivering what she thought was the coup de grace, right? Mm-hmm. So Wallace kills that replicant that had just been born, kisses her, and then says that. And so it's like literally like step by step.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also loved when Kay goes back for the memory, which I know we'll go backwards and fill all these gaps, but they're listening to that first interaction of Deckard and Rachel, where she's like asking him questions and stuff, and kind of like, I guess it's like flirting, if you will. And she even says like it's exhilarating, you know, being asked personal questions. Like it makes you feel.
And then immediately follows it up with a personal question, like absolutely no subtlety to that interaction at all.
Right. Right.
And it's like, is she trying to like do that to Kay and just sucks at it? You know, like is just like, cause he's just like, no, you know, but I think it's fascinating because she's in some ways is learning how to walk and, you know, but also is this like super cold and like super detached. Like, I don't know. I think she is kind of what you think of as like a robot. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Whereas I've always thought in both movies, the replicants, even in the first one, like Deckard has less empathy than most of the replicants that he's tracking down. So I think it's always cool how like narratively it frames the replicants as like the victims and the ones who have the humanity in a world that's like, doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting choice that Kay specifically, like you can tell he has empathy for characters in the film, but like he does not like ever show it on his face. Mm-hmm.
Except for Joy sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Like very, like very rarely dies. With Joy. We should talk about Joy.
I was just thinking that. Sorry.
I
didn't mean to.
No, you're good. Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. Corey, you can start it.
No, I was just agreeing that's a good idea. You guys go.
I think Joy's fascinating because it's just funny because, like, I was watching this with Hannah was doing something. She'd never seen it. And so she didn't really know what was going on. And she was like, she pops up and she's see-through. And she's like, what is this? And I was like, well, Ryan Gosling's not a human, but he's basically human and she's an AI, you know, yada, yada, yada. And it's funny because, like, there's that one scene where, like, she gets upgraded to the mobile thing and it has, like, her menu. You know what I mean? And, it's like, you can see all the customization and everything. And so it's like, yeah, this is just, like, it's not, like, it she acts so personable. But in reality, it's literally just tailor-made to, like, whatever.
There's such an interesting, so I think that's an interesting question too, is like, is it real or is it not? Whereas like, okay, so the advertisements are like, she'll do whatever you want her to do. But also she goes the extra mile in a lot of scenes where she's like, I mean, it's weird, but in the like intimate scene, she hires a prostitute to be like, I want to be real for you. Where she's like trying in this relationship, which is strange because I feel like they wouldn't normally be programmed to hire a prostitute. You know what I mean? So it's interesting their relationship. And then when she's about to die, she's like, I love you. I don't know. It's, and even Kay doesn't believe it in the beginning where she's like, I'm so happy when I'm with you. And he's like, you're just saying the right things. He's like, you don't have to say that.
Yeah.
But then I think through the film, he sort of falls more for her, which is interesting.
Sure. Yeah, definitely by the end, because she says you have to put me in the emulator, otherwise they're gonna come here and they're gonna like take all the data out of me, everything that I know. And he says, but if I do that and that breaks, then you're gone forever. But it's interesting at the beginning because he had to. I don't think he was that just like came outfitted in his apartment. He had to make a choice to like purchase that thing. You know, I think Love even says at one point, I see you're also a consumer, like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you're a customer.
So it's clear that he wants some sort of emotional connection with something, whether it's AI or real or, you know, whatever. But then when she says, like, you know, I'm so happy whenever I'm with you, he just, like, coldly says, like, you don't have to say that, which was interesting to me that, like, it's clear that he wants some sort of, but he doesn't trust that it's authentic, right?
Yeah. Do you think, so let's take a verdict real fast. Do you think by the end, like, do you think she loves him or do you think it's just really good AI?
I think by the end it's real. because I think they don't have a good hold on emotion yet for the replicants or the AI. You know what I mean? I think they've got, they can play God a little bit and make these characters and people and whatnot, but I don't think they have as much control over them as they think. I think by the end, I mean, I think she's pretty, because she can think for herself too. He's not like just asking her questions. Like someone brings up the wooden horse with the inscription, and she's like, "You, how many times have you told me that story? Here's the horse and whatnot." So she can think and pull on memories. So I don't know. I think she's pretty self aware.
Yeah, for sure. And it makes sense that in this world that's asking these questions about, you know, memories and emotions and do replicants have souls and et cetera, that she would also be able to form memories and form relationships. And the more time, even if, like, the more time you spend with someone, you're going to become closer, unless you absolutely loathe them. You just absolutely hate them. But in like, that, in that like space, just like me and Hunter, that's right. But in that space, it makes sense that the more time that they spend together, that something that starts out artificial and just like superficial could turn into something that is real by the end, for sure.
Well, there's one little thing that I want to throw out to you guys then, because I think I might have mentioned this to you, Zach. But when he sees the giant, she calls him Joe eventually, right? And she's like, let's you have a name, you Joe, because you're special. Then
most basic name.
Yeah, that was so. He's K.
Yeah,
like picking Joe of all the names is so crazy to me.
It was,
and they call him that for the rest of the movie. I'm like, this is not it.
Yeah, she says it one time, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And then she just keeps calling him that. And then when he's asked by Deckard, he says, "Oh, my name's Joe." And it's like, why did you pick up on that? You're K. Like, come on.
Yeah.
As somebody whose legal first name is Joe, I didn't like it. I was like, that's a boring name. But then later, after he's all beaten down and stuff, he sees the giant naked Joy. And she says, "You look like a good Joe." And so to me, that hit like maybe he was like, oh, so it's not a name that like my Joy gave me. It's just a name that Joy is programmed to tell me. You see what I'm saying? Like maybe. I don't know. To me, it was sort of like this, like maybe he's not actually special, which he's not.
I hear
you. Which I think
you.
Is kind of the point.
I hear you. Way. Like it's like the default name. But what if it's a human that actually has a name? It's not going to, like, Joy's not going to call everybody Joe, I wouldn't think.
Fair. I think, but for me, that I do think it was too much to not be real, I think, like Joy's love for Kay and vice versa. I think it was too much to be like, this is totally fake. But that did make me think.
Was there a cut of this movie where the giant holographic Joy was clothed, or am I making that up? Because I seem to remember a shot where it's the same Joy, but she's wearing like neon, like blue and pink, like shorts and a top.
So that's a transitional scene later, I think.
Okay.
So when Joe, or funny, when Kay gets rescued and he's by the fireside, and the embers sort of go into the sky, and then it's like sideways and transitions to the skyline. I think there's an advertisement of her there wearing the blue.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's circle back to the linchpin of the movie, and that is Rachel and Deckard have a child. Because there was one line, I know we're already like almost an hour, but whatever, there's a lot to unpack in this movie, where, what's her name? Joshi? I almost said Yoshi, like from Mario.
Madam,
where she's talking, and she's right. I think she is right. though her actions are like, hey, go find this kid and kill it, are uncalled for. But she is like, this is going to break the world if we realize that we can create beings that can reproduce. So what is that like? How do you guys feel? Like, what does that feel like to y'all to be like, would that be like, could humans be God in that sense? Being like, we can create people that are artificial artificial, but then can also reproduce with humans. I'm just, I mean, like,
well, it's interesting.
What does that
feel?
You know what I'm saying?
There's two sides. Well, there's three sides of this. There's the replicants who want to be recognized as their own real people. Mm-hmm. And then there's Wallace, who wants them to reproduce so he can have more replicants. And then there's Madam, who's like, this eliminates the class divide. If replicants can reproduce, then we're all on the same level, and then this is all fucked. Like, we have no, yeah, everything falls apart. There's no slave labor. There's no whatever. It screws everything. So I think it does change a lot.
What's funny, and let me ask you guys this. I think it's fascinating that Wallace is sitting there like, oh, I want them to reproduce because I can't make enough. I can't make blah, 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 blah. You know, I can't. He's like, we've gone to 9 planets, and that's pitiful. We should have been to 1 million. What, in what way does he think that I'm going to make a replicant and another replicant, and they're going to give birth to a replicant? I guess at that point, would it be a replicant? It wouldn't have a serial number. I think, Zach, you asked that actually. If he was born, it wouldn't have. It wouldn't,
yeah,
be,
it's not
going to
have like serial numbers on its eyes and stuff. If it was like born,
yeah,
you know.
But who's
to
say?
I would think.
Like, his logic is, I can build a slave labor force big enough if they can reproduce. Are those kids going to be docile and be like, oh, I guess I'm just? Or does it keep? Is he saying because they're born to replicants, like, they'll just be like, oh, I'm just a lower class, so I have to. You see what I'm saying? Like, because you can't classify Deckard's daughter, mind you, her dad's human. She's not a replicant. Like, she wouldn't be classified as, is she half replicant? You see what I'm saying?
I think it gets into information that we don't have. What we don't have is how Wallace makes these replicants obey. All we know is that he gives them memories, but we don't know what makes them obey. And we don't know if that passes on to the kid, if they have a kid. Yeah. So I feel like that's outside of our ability to decide. I don't know.
Yeah, I think his logic is that whatever is making his replicants docile is going to make their offspring docile as well, just like by proxy. And I think his rationale is also, like, if these are born to replicants, they'll automatically be a lower, like, caste of being, and so it'll be accepted for them. I mean, we've already got, like, child labor going on elsewhere, in the outskirts of L.A., right? So this would just be, like, legal sanctioned that, and I think the idea would just be to, like, treat them like dirt from the beginning and have them working from as early as they can. So hate that, man.
I was gonna say something. That whole dang it, I don't know, never mind. Zach, do you want to ask questions?
Yeah, so all my questions,
we have a lot to go over still, but it all pertains to the kid, right?
All my questions are about Dr. Stalene.
Got it. I'll do my best.
So we find out through the plot that Kay is not Deckard's son and Rachel's son, that it was actually a girl that was born. And then plot twist, it was Dr. Stalene who's creating the memories from earlier in the film. My questions are pertaining to the birth records first. So they had this, like, secret birth out on this farm where Bautista lives. And it was, it's understood to me that, like, Rachel was not supposed to give birth. So I don't understand why they would even, like, record birth records. Why wouldn't just, like, completely under the radar, like, nothing at all? That's my first question.
Because there's two. There's, like, a boy and a girl, right?
Yeah, they duplicate it to try and, like, throw them off the scent. But I'm like, why'd they even record birth records? Like, why wouldn't they just, like, not do anything at all? Why wouldn't they just, like, give birth, keep it under the rug, you know?
Yeah, that's it's a good question. I mean, the only thing I could think of is that they want to like reintegrate her into society. That's the only thing I can think of is for her to live a semi-normal life is that she needs a birth record. If they wanted her to live on a farm in the middle of nowhere with her and just Deckard, I guess that would have been a good plan too. And then they could have ignored, they could have not done a birth record. But the only thing I can think of is that they wanted her to integrate into society.
Integrate.
Normally.
Which is interesting because at the age of 8, she's put in a glass box for the rest of her life. But I mean, that's,
is that real? Do you think that's like, she actually has something or is that,
that is the question. I actually don't know.
It would make sense that they would, we don't know. Right. But it would make sense that they would make that up because they don't want people to get close to her because if they get too close, they might, you know, catch on to something or whatever. Right.
Well, I also want to know the transition between, so staying at the orphanage and then getting to the glass box. Because she's like, my parents put me in a glass box. Okay, so your adoptive parents put you in a glass box because they adopted you from wherever, the orphanage, and then found out you had issues and left you here and then took off, which is crazy.
Well, because if she does have issues, it also implies that I would say that the replicants that can give birth it's not fully fleshed out right, because like she has issues and it's the assumption is, which there are people who are born human that have immune issues, but I guess it would be implying, well, her mom's a replicant, so is she fully developed, if you will, you know what I'm saying?
It's so, in terms of her being left in that glass box, it makes it sound like it's all part of the plan, right? Like there's this entire like contingency plan of like what to do with her to make sure that she's taken care of and she's protected. It blows my mind that their plan was to have her work directly for Wallace and create replicants, like help directly in the creation of replicants. That's wild to me. It would make sense. And I think there's a Blade Runner 2099 in development. So
yeah,
this is part of the plan. But the only way it would make sense to me is if she is like intentionally putting like rebellious memories in the replicants so that they will one day like revolt and like be free. Like it wouldn't make sense for her, the one like reproduced like replicant child or half replicant child or whatever, would just be like complicit in this like creation of slaves.
So she doesn't know who she is at this point, right?
She does. She has to, because she is putting, well, maybe she doesn't know who her parents are, but she's putting her memories into the replicants.
That was my next question.
Even though she doesn't know
she's like half replicant.
Okay.
But she is, so that was my next question. So I didn't think that she knew that she was like half replicant.
Yeah,
but
I don't think she doesn't know. I think their plan, if I have to think of it, it would be like the best way to make her anonymous is to throw her into that orphanage and to have one of a bajillion and have her like thrown to the wind and see what happens from there. And then she just so happens to make memories and have a compromised immune system. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
But then what's the end goal with her? Like if she's so precious and they're just like throwing her out there and seeing what happens, like what is the,
is it just to like,
I think it's just to live a normal life.
Okay.
Right. Ish. Because from Deckard's perspective, he's like, the plan was, I didn't want her to get torn apart and researched on. Like that's his only thing. Who knows what Rachel's idea was, but I think in his mind, he's like, throw her out there and make her as unimportant and not noteworthy as possible.
But that does raise up the question that Zach asked, which I have too, is he, you know, Kay, Joe, whatever, Kay comes and finds her. At this point, he's reeling because he finds this wooden horse that he was under the implication that his memory of it, he knew his memory of it was fake. like he's self-aware enough to be like, my memories aren't real. Like, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But then he finds it. And what's funny is that when I first saw it in the theaters, that moment was kind of, I was like, what's happening? But when I watched it again, I was like, this dude's whole life just got flipped upside down.
Right.
And like, he has this like silent, like he starts kind of shaking. He's like tearing up and stuff. And then he, like, there's that great scene where he, like, screams and stuff, you know, like, when he goes and sees her. But to Zach's point, he's like, you can't use real memories, right? And she's like, yeah, that's illegal.
Of course not. That's illegal. But it's her memory, and she knows it when she recognizes it because she cries.
Yeah, but she, even she says, like, this is, someone lived this.
Yeah.
You did. Like you
well,
did.
She knows that. So, she put the memory in him. You see what I'm saying?
But but I'm saying, like, it does raise a good question of, like, why? Why would she do that if she... I don't know. It's just interesting. Was it a mistake? I don't think... Because she's, like, the best of the best, right? So, like...
Yeah, I think it's... I've looked that up before, honestly, and I think it's sort of implied that it's, like, a tongue-in-cheek. Like, no, I wouldn't do that. That's illegal, you know? Which I don't know why... She is still motivated to give them a real memory. I think she probably thinks it's nice. But that's all I can gather is that it's supposed to be like a tongue in cheek. No, I would never do that, officer. That's illegal.
Okay. Yeah. But it Hunter, it seems like they all have that memory because when Kay finds out that he's not the son, he like looks defeated and I can't remember her name. I kept calling her Trinity from Matrix because it just she had like the glasses and everything, but she's like, oh, my child, you thought it was you, we all wish it was us. And it makes me think that they all have that memory, and so they all like went down that rabbit hole of like, maybe it's me because this memory feels so real, blah 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 blah, right? It's not vetted. That's just me thinking.
On that note, one of my favorite themes about this, and I know we haven't even talked about Deckard, but we can in a minute. This movie goes a little nihilistic for a second, but I think it's like in a good way in the sense of being like Kay's like this chosen one. You know, he's like, I'm special. I'm Joe. You know, whatever. And then it's just like, actually, you're not. You are. Just a guy, whether you're real or not.
Average Joe.
And there's that scene where he like walks out and he's holding he like catches the snow. And I love that idea of like, if you look at you, you're fully unique. You're one of kind, but also there's billions of you. You know what I'm saying? Like this idea. And I feel like,
welcome to Earth, Hunter.
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying, like, but that's, it's a beautiful, like, I think that's, what does she say? She says some line that, like, is, like, his turning point where he's, like, willing to be, like, well, I'm not the child, but I can still, like, push this forward and still, does she say?
I don't think he has that moment until the next scene, which is with the big Joy, but regardless, because I think, he is cut down in that scene a lot.
Yeah.
And then she's like, she says the most human thing we can do is dying for the right cause, all that jazz. And I think he goes and sees Joy and he sort of realizes, well, he's not this said child, but I think he realizes that for the time that he believed he was, he lived like a real human life. And he was like, I think I can still do that. And I think that's still worth fighting for.
And he literally rips off the Band-Aid because you can't, there's no like quick solution. Right. And he goes and faces that conflict.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the question posed by, what's his name? Gaff.
I've never learned his name.
It's Gaff.
Okay. It's Gaff. But like one of my favorite, first off, I think we can establish that the ending of Blade Runner 1 is like perfection. Just everything, like the questions posed, everything is great. And I love his last line in the movie which it comes back again where he's like, it's a shame that she won't live, but then again, who does? And I think that still sort of looms over everything, you know, like, you know, like, what is it to live? What is it to be alive? What is it to, because metaphorically with the dove and stuff, I think Roy kind of has a soul at the end. And so what does that, like, mean? Like, I think it's such a fascinating idea, which maybe we'll get there soon with AI, but to have something that's sentient, right? And to try and mm-hmm. tell it, hey, you're not actually alive. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could not even fathom being Rachel and being like, oh my God, I'm artificial. Holy shit. But I also couldn't imagine being Kay for a brief minute and being like, oh my God, I might not be artificial. I could be real, human, or whatever. Like, those are massive things. I just think it's awesome. I don't know. I'm don't really have a point with that. I just think it's super fascinating. And I love the, like, micro emotions.
That quote, I forget who it is, but it's something like, the conditions in which you are born do not matter. It's what you do with your life, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Which is super, I mean, it applies a lot to Blade Runner, which is just, I mean, you empathize with Roy. You're like, oh my God, he figured out that he gets 4 years, and he's like, let's extend that. Let's figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Because that's what anybody would do.
Yeah. Zach, it looks like you're about to say something.
Oh, it was not really. I've decided that if I figure out that I have a set time left and I've got like 1 hour, I'm going wolf mode.
For sure. just gonna howl the moon.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm going to have a dove and just, like, release the dove, like, the moment I die.
And just, like, put your head down. And just, you're going to give a really, really powerful speech at the end?
No, it's going to be something about, super lame.
You know what's funny is that...
Were we going to say, Corey?
I think it's so interesting that was not... improvised, but was suggested by the actor that wasn't in the script. I'm blanking everybody's names tonight, but he was like, this needs to be in it, and he came up with that on his own, which that was makes the movie for me.
That was my favorite line, my favorite moment of the movie, so that was well done. Let's see. Rutger,
I was gonna say
Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer, yeah, thank you.
Hauer, thank you.
The only thing that we haven't really touched on yet is the return of Deckard, and that whole scene and going to Las Vegas, which I don't ever know if it's actually, like, said by name, but it's Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on? I thought it was. I loved how, which Corey, me and you have talked about this to quite an extent. Me and Zach have too. How we live in a cameo world now, where it's just like. Oh, look, he's going to pop up for 5 minutes and be like, hey, look, I'm in this. And it's not that, like, he has a role, but it's not, like, his story anymore. Like, sure. It's not like they're, like, relying. Like, let's just lean on Harrison Ford for 2.5 hours. Like, he doesn't show up for another, I think, for, like, 1 hour and 10 minutes or something like that. He's not in it.
Well, even, like, you can compare it to other roles Harrison's had. You can compare this to when they brought him back in fucking Star Wars. They're like, oh my God, Han Solo and Chewie. But right. For this, he's like a major plot point where it's like, whoa, he could have had a kid, or he did have a kid, but it could be Kay and we're meeting this character. It's like a continuation of their story, which mm-hmm. I think is awesome, right? It was like, actually, it's like bringing those characters back, you should utilize them. It shouldn't just be like, hey, it's eye candy. Hey, look, it's them. It's like 100%. They actually use them, which is awesome.
Yeah, but...
I also love... This is totally unrelated to anything, but I love the his dog. And Kay's like, is it real? He's like, why don't you ask him? And that's it. That's sort of like... It's such a great line for Deckard.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, like, there's lots of hints, obviously, to be like how animals are like basically extinct and really expensive to get, like, artificial ones. But Zach, you said something where you were like, dogs can't have whiskey, so obviously it's not real.
It's toxic. It's toxic to dogs.
And my first thought was, Yeah, I was like, yeah, but it's cool. Like, it's such
it's
a
cool
thing
and it's
that,
edgy.
That like Deckard be like, I don't give a shit. Like, whatever. I'm just gonna pour whiskey. But no, I love how consistently through both movies, Deckard just gets his ass kicked. Like, even when he's like winning, he's not even remotely winning. Like, Kay's just like,
yeah,
taking,
Roy
like,
saved
okay.
his life.
Yeah,
he,
oh, yeah,
he kicked
totally.
His ass and then saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's
that's
trying
a
to fight
point
Kay,
for him being a replicant, right? Is that he's just consistently getting his ass kicked without like actually taking that much actual damage or like punishment.
Yes, yes, but I also would argue and say that it's a point for him being a human too, because he doesn't stand a chance. Like, he's so much weaker.
Yeah, he just gets as much like. He falls through some floors and stuff, but Roy really toys with him. He just breaks his fingers so yeah. he can't shoot him. And then he's like, try and get me. You know, that's really it. And then he's like trying to climb outside the building with a pinky and his left hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, did y'all think it could go either way.
Did y'all think it was a bit much when they realize that they've been found out and that Love and her crew are like there? And Deckard, like, walks through a door, and Kay just, like, fucking runs through a wall. Did y'all think that was a bit much?
It would have been if Deckard didn't lock the door behind him. If he just closed it.
I didn't realize that he locked the door behind him.
Yeah, he, like, closes it and then locks it, I think, if I remember correctly. So if he had just, like, closed it, it would have been super extra for Kay to be like, I'm going through this wall. But... Yeah. It might have been more efficient time-wise if he could go through that wall.
That is funny. I thought that was really funny. I'm trying to think of the questions that he asked, because that's when we kind of learned that Deckard's like, my role, I had one job, and that was to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely sounds like he doesn't know what's happened. I also liked how it wasn't like some... I don't know. Like, I just loved how they handled his character and this and his role, because it was like, it kind of came back to him, but it wasn't like he was some. The only thing that made him special was that he was with Rachel. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like, oh, this legendary guy
Blade Runner who's the only one that can kill these people.
Yeah. Like, that would have been really dumb if they're like, we have to go get the best. And it's 75-year-old Harrison Ford. Because that's not real. It's just like the new Indiana Jones. While it was fun, it's like the dude's 82. Like, he probably can't do this stuff anymore.
I do think it's awesome that the line that, like, endears Kay to Deckard is when Kay's asking Deckard all these questions and he's sort of dodging him, and he goes, I didn't figure you as one for bullshit. And then it cuts back to Harrison. He's like smiling for the first time. I think that's such a good interaction. Like, the only time Harrison smiles is when he gets cussed out. And he's like, oh, I actually kind of like this guy. I think that's great for Deckard.
At this point, Kay's thinking, this is my father.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. I thought it was really, really well done. I think it's one of those times where it's like, this was the perfect balance, at least for me. What else do we have? Anything else? Because I feel like we've covered a lot of the bases. I know we're already like an hour and 15, but Zach, do you have any more questions? Or Corey, do you have any points that you want? Zach's got one. Okay, cool. Here we go.
So I'm willing to buy that they just wanted their daughter to have a normal life. I'm willing to buy that. How does the whole like underground sewer freedom fighter squad, who are like keeping tabs on everybody, like, what are they up to? Are they just like trying to survive, or like, do they have like a goal? Like, I thought that they were like, their goal was to like liberate all the replicants and like make them be like recognized as human. And so I thought that the daughter like played into that. Now I'm thinking that maybe she was just meant to like live a life just to show that she can. So what were they doing? What are you doing, Hunter?
I was reading something. Sorry.
Okay.
I was listening. You're saying the chick with one eye, like their goal.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to hear what Corey says, because.
So. Well, first of all, I'll tell you my first reaction to that. When I was in the theater and didn't know Denis that well, like as a director, I was sitting there and he met these freedom fighters and I was like, fuck, is the rest of this movie going to turn into like him joining this group and they start fighting people? I was like, this is going to take a left turn and I don't want it to take. And I was so happy it didn't go that route. But as far as I can think, there's, I guess, two. One is, let's say she has, the whole point of them dropping her off and leaving her and everyone being a stranger is that no one can like tie back to her. No one can trace them back to this, the daughter. So my only thing is either they are some, like you said, freedom fighters who are fighting the good fight and trying to get like rights for replicants. And they find Kay and they think he'd be a good addition. Or the alternative is she is trying to relocate this daughter and use her as like a martyr for them being people, being like, this is our proof that we can do it, or like we can be our own people. We are people. So that's my best guess.
Okay.
Do you think... Question. So we have this group, replicants, right? Nexus 8s and before. Or new ones. No, I think there's... I can't remember. Doesn't matter. They all know of this miracle of Anna. I think is her name. Anna is the doctor's name, right? The daughter?
Yeah.
And yes, they can say, look, she's proof that it's possible that we are alive, that we are... real in a sense, but the fact remains that no one else, at least at this point, can do that. It's just Rachel, right? So what becomes their goal? Do they want to be like, okay, let's take her and figure out how to do it again and make replicants like that? See what I'm saying?
I think what is the next step for them?
Zach, what are you smiling about? Sorry,
I think the next step would be like a more humane approach to figuring out how reproduction works than Wallace would do. Oh, sorry, my audio just looped back to me. This is strange.
if you need to figure it out, you can.
It's all right. It's fine. I don't think it's recording that way. It's just off a little bit. So if I start talking slower, that's why. But I think they would just try to honestly like breed her, like try to be like, all right, let's see who can have a baby with her because she was born, so maybe she can have kids or whatnot.
Zach, what were you gonna say?
That was kind of the same question that I was asking. Maybe it was just phrased a little differently, but like what's their goal in this whole situation?
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I was just thinking more specifically of like...
With her?
Yeah, like, are they going to be like, well, let's figure it out. Our goal is the same as Wallace. Let's just do it.
Yeah, because it's not like they've had like a giant... It's not like they're like, this is possible. Let's have an orgy and see if we can make it happen. Like,
yeah, like they all
maybe they
that
did. Maybe that was step one and now they're on step 30.
That was how they met.
There you go.
And then they were like, all right, well, maybe we should start some other stuff, I guess.
Right.
Oh, man. I was going to say, Corey, is there anything else that you kind of found or wanted to talk about in this movie that we haven't touched on before we wrap up? Because I know we're going long.
Yeah, not really. I think we touched on a lot of the main plot points and the whole purpose of it and whatnot.
Zach, you have anything else?
No.
No? All right.
No.
Well, Zach, because this was a quote-unquote your episode, you can ask Corey... The question of the hour.
So, Corey, but is Blade Runner 2049 good?
I think it's better than good. I think it's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
There you go.
My favorite movie because I've seen it recently. It goes back and forth with the original. If I watch the original, I might go, this is better. It just depends, whichever I've seen more recently.
Sure. I can say watching them 2 weeks back to back and after discussing them, I definitely think that 2049 is like a much more polished film. Obviously, like, this is just really well done. In terms of the like philosophical underpinnings and like the theme of the film, I think I like the first one more. So Hunter, which one, if you had to, I know you said before that you were struggling, but after having a discussion, like after talking for an hour, can you pick?
I think I lean 2049. Okay. And I think what pushes it over the edge for me is
Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
And Jared Leto.
I don't blame you.
Is Jared Leto. Jared Leto is the reason I...
Here you go.
No, I just think it's more nuanced. And that's crazy to me because I think Blade Runner is very nuanced. Mm-hmm. But I mean that in the sense of the performances. I think this is great. I think it's just... But I recognize that it would not exist without Ridley Scott's original. And I watching it, the first one back... You know, last week I was like blown away by it. But I love the idea of like not just being like, oh, I thought I was alive and now I'm a replicant, but I love the reverse of that, being like, I thought I was one thing, which is kind of the same thing, but being like, I thought I was this soulless machine, but I'm actually like, what if I'm actually alive? And even when you realize that he's not, he still is like, no, actually I am alive, you know, I'm real. So I would agree and say that it is phenomenal. It's not just good, it's phenomenal. I don't know if it can be nominated for a Golden Good award, because Blade Runner, I think, is going to be a Golden Oldie. We have an award show. I think I've explained this to you, Corey.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has some criteria. So the films that we... Well, the only real criteria is that it has to be a film that we reviewed that year.
Yeah, so maybe
so
it
can be nominated for a Golden Oldie. Do you think it's worthy of a Golden Oldie, Hunter? I'll leave it up to you.
Well, no, I think it'd be worthy of a Golden Good, right? Cause
sorry,
it's
yeah, golden, a yeah. Golden Good. A
I
Golden
would say
Good.
This, I would say this is up for a Golden Good.
Okay. Well, we have a nominee.
There you go.
So now it's time for Every Movie Sucks.
Every Movie Sucks.
Oh, heck yeah.
Corey, I don't know if you want to look anything up, but what we do is we just look up bad reviews on Letterboxd.
Okay.
So you can just react to them if you want. If you look them up, you can. We do just a couple.
I might look up some, but I'll probably mainly react.
Because I know that we're going on. We got a lot to go through still. I got to put mine up. I should have done this beforehand, but mine is loading. Oh, come on.
Letterboxd's website is really slow for some reason. Like, when I get on their website, it takes a while to get to the low reviews.
All right, I've got one. Zach, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is Half Star from Surya Nagesh. The director is too self-indulgent. Like, who the fuck pauses that much between sentences while having face-to-face conversations?
I can see where they're coming from, but that's like Denis' thing, right? Like, that's... I don't know. I love it stylistically. Fantasy Rat says, shit from a butt. That's it.
That's awesome.
I've got one. Corey, unless you got one, do you want to do one?
No, I don't have any yet.
Okay. This one's from Lamia, Half Star. Why is it so fucking long for a mid-plot?
That's so crazy. I know they've got, like, you know what? Let's dive into these people's profiles. What are they reviewing 10 stars?
Hold on. Let's
I'm
see.
Sure they're doing, like, I don't know, Fast and Furious 11. Like, this is great because I didn't have to think at all.
Corey, every time someone triggers me, that's exactly what I do. I go look at their profile and just see what they've reviewed.
This is Lamia. I don't recognize. The favorite films are a film called Nobody Knows, Before Sunset, After Sun.
Oh my! Of course, Before Sunset. Yeah, okay. Those are admittedly like supposed to be good movies.
They gave Barbie. What's funny is that they gave Arrival 5 stars.
Yeah, Arrival is one of the best movies ever made. Easy,
but they hated this one. That's funny.
That's so crazy.
Super genius Malcolm Middle says, "The ugliest fucking MCU wannabe. Well, that just happened. Movie I've ever seen."
Well, that just happened? What are you talking about?
Okay, okay. Are y'all ready? Favorite movie, The Flash.
Oh, okay. I thought that was for Blade Runner. I was like, what are we talking about?
No.
That review was for Blade Runner. I'm just looking at their profile now, and their favorite movie is The Flash.
Got it. Of course.
Their second favorite movie was a 2017 SpongeBob movie.
Amazing.
And their third favorite movie is a movie... That's interesting. Trump versus the Illuminati.
Amazing. this
The Flash being their favorite movie is so on par.
Yeah, absolutely.
The irony is like, I mean, it's next level. I can't describe it. You saying like, this is the most, well, that just happened MCU movie. Well, The Flash is just Superman the cameos. Like, it's right. Crazy. It's right. Insane.
Look who we got to play Batman.
Yeah, that's... Oh, my God, Keaton's back. They marketed the movie as a Batman poster with The Flash, yes. Like, at the bottom with the date.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that, we can go on to the shindigs if you want to, but apparently Tim Burton finally spoke out about The Flash and basically was just like, fuck the studios. They took my stuff and ruined it.
Wow.
Essentially. But what's funny, people were kind of giving him shit because he was like, you know, I created this. I made these things, and they just kind of take it and do whatever they want with it. And they were like, bro, you made a Batman movie. You didn't make Batman. So, like, in the studio's defense, I guess, they were like, they own the IP, which I get. But he was just like, I don't care. Whatever. I'm kind of anti that now, which is Tim Burton's, whatever. I was going to read one more, but I think it's actually not as funny as I thought it was. So never mind.
Read it.
Okay, it's kind of long. It says, it's giving Star Wars, Bounty Hunter, and Scavenger times Tenet times Snowpiercer times Mad Max. Why did it take so long to find him if this is some super surveillance state? A perfect setting for to enact your women as property fantasy. Where is Harrison Ford? Classic Villeneuve with slow pacing and ridiculously loud blasts of sound.
Which I feel so bad for the hollow life that person lives. Also, comparing it to Tenet after the fact that Tenet came out like years after is crazy.
Yeah. It happens all the time, dude. There's so many people like, oh, this reminds me of something that came out 30 years after this. And it's like, oh, that's not. Okay, I don't really have a lot of news because I haven't been paying attention because I'm just been lazy and I apologize. But I have a few things. Let's see here. Oh, we finally, it comes out in 2 months, we finally got a trailer for Aquaman 2. I haven't watched it yet. But apparently it looks like Aquaman 2.
I saw it for the first time. I thought it had been out, but I think it debuted
it's like this past
during
Thursday.
during a football game. Yeah, it was Thursday Night Football. Thursday. And I watched it, and it looks interesting. It doesn't, I don't know.
Well, I'm confused too because I thought they lost the movie. Like, I thought they lost everything.
I don't know. What happened to that? It's been like recut like 100 times where it's like they've done a ton of test screenings. They're like, oh, this still sucks ass, so we're gonna try and fix it. But also, it's like it's another one of those lame duck movies where it's like the universe doesn't matter anymore. We're starting over, even though he might still be playing Aquaman. Doesn't matter. So that happened. Liv Schreiber apparently is going to return to his Sabretooth role in Deadpool 3. He played Sabretooth in Wolverine Origins, which is notoriously like one of the worst movies. Have you guys seen Mr. and Mrs. Smith? With like Brad Pitt and stuff, Angelina Jolie from like 2006. Well, Donald Glover is starring in a remake of that, a series. And it got pushed back to...
Who's Mrs. Smith?
I don't know. I don't know her name. I can look it up.
I love Don Glover, but they're scraping the bottom of the barrel for like IPs to bring back.
Yeah, so that's being remade, and it got delayed because of the writer strike. And apparently, Corey, you're gonna love this. You're gonna love this. Apparently, Donald Glover, this is him again. He's doing a Lando project. Okay, it's gonna be a movie.
Yeah, it was gonna be a series, and then they decided to make it a movie instead.
So it's going to be a movie. So we're getting everybody coming back. We have Hayden Christensen's back. You know, we're doing Ahsoka. I haven't watched any of it. I don't know if you've seen it, but...
I haven't watched any of it, but from what I've seen, people freaking out about on Instagram, it's just like, hey, look at this scene from the Clone Wars. How cool is this?
I saw one, and they were like, oh, my God, his Clone Wars suit. And I was like, look, you can ask Zach. I'm a suit guy. I love a good suit in a movie. I love the costumes. But I was like, that's not a plot point. That's just a costume.
That's the thing. Sorry, you go.
Well, I was just going to say, what people are showing on social media is literally, it's like frame by frame, like a scene in the Clone Wars is done live action. It's like there's no changes whatsoever. And it's like, what is this adding? You know, but Corey, you were going to say something.
It's just real life.
Well, it's just like, I don't know. Filoni's getting a little self-indulgent with his stuff where he's like, now that he's in charge, he's like, let me bring back stuff that I did already. And this series is just like season 5 of Rebels. I don't know. It's just, it's getting to the point where like, or it's been at the point, honestly, where I don't need to know everything about every character ever. Like every character doesn't need a spinoff series. And it's kind of, to liken it to Blade Runner, I kind of, like I said, I didn't really want to know any more about those freedom fighters. It was just like, it makes sense that they're there and I don't need to know anything else. Like, of course, there's going to be a coalition of them, but cool. That's it. I don't need to know.
Yeah.
I don't need a spinoff series about what they're doing until they meet Kay. That being said, Andor is exempt from all of this because it's amazing.
You keep saying that. Andor is really, really good. I still haven't watched it.
It's unbelievable. It's not just good Star Wars. It's good, period. Like, so well written, and it's awesome.
You know what's funny? I literally almost finished sentence, and I almost said good content, and I thought of a podcast that I just listened to it on the drive back from Knoxville today with my brother and Hannah and all them, and they were talking about movies, and they're like, they called some movie content, and they're like, oh my god, what have we become that we're calling? I thought of Martin Scorsese, where I was like, it's just content. Anyway, thought it was funny. Last thing that I have, this is kind of funny. Chris Pine, everybody knows Chris Pine. He got spit on by Harry Styles.
Chris,
he made
Pine.
Pine, yeah, Chris Pine.
I thought you said Prine at first, and I
probably did, but I was supposed to say Pine. He directed and starred in a movie called Pool Man. It was his directorial debut. That would supposed to be some sort of crime thriller, black comedy type thing. And apparently it sucks so bad that it played at the Toronto Film Festival and people walked out.
I don't know. It's like these people from WWE needing to be actors and musicians. Why do you need to make like a lateral career move? Just keep acting. Or just keep making music, or just keep wrestling. Quit branching out. I don't need an album from The Rock. I don't need Ariana Grande to act in movies. I just need you to keep doing what you're doing.
Dude, Ariana Grande, apparently, because she just got divorced. This is random. I just saw this on Instagram. Apparently, she had an affair with her co-star because she's in Wicked.
Yeah.
Which is also going to be a part one and part two, which is crazy. Mm-hmm.
Is it really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, her co-star, she, like, broke up his marriage, and he played live-action SpongeBob in a SpongeBob musical.
That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, double worse for her ex-husband now.
That's so funny. Anyway, that's all I had for news. So, Zach, the Braves are trash right now, although they're also amazing. This is Zach's Brave Minute. Corey, we talk about the Braves for a second.
Yeah.
Although Corey's in the BP Sports text, so he's up there.
I get some updates here and there. I live by the I hear the fireworks when they win.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah, that's you live right over there?
Yeah.
Cool.
I can see him from, like, my gate.
Up until like 3 months ago, I was living up in Smyrna, and yeah, you could hear the fireworks and you could see them just beyond the trees. But anyways, the Braves have dropped. They got swept by the Marlins, which is really sad. Like 36-11 was the score differential across three games. Yeah. It was pretty bad. It's usually what we do to the Marlins. But putting that aside, because I think we're in rest mode. Mm-hmm. Like Acuna didn't play all weekend. He left the game early on Friday, and then he didn't play yesterday, and he didn't play today. The Braves clinched their division. They're setting records for, like, franchise home runs. Matt Olson hit his 52nd home run last night. He now holds the record most home runs by a Brave player in history, which is exciting. It's something that we didn't think we were gonna get out of that deal when Freddie left, right? We didn't think we were gonna have someone hit 52 home runs.
Freddie who?
And it seems like we're just on cruise control. I don't know if Snit's goal is to have the best record in baseball to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, because it doesn't seem like he is managing that way, which is fine. If his goal is to just have everyone healthy and just win the games that are in front of us, then, you know, yeah.
I'll take it.
So there's my Braves minute.
Zach, that's very brave of you.
It's the bravest thing I've done all week.
Corey, the floor is yours if you have anything you want to talk about, anything coming up, anything you're working on. Or you can just say nah.
Just finished two short films this past month. So one directed by me, one directed by another coworker of ours. So keep an eye out for those.
Are we going to be screening those at the office sometime? We should.
I'd love to. Yeah, I think it'd be fun. But I've got to actually look at the footage.
You have to finish making the movie, don't you? Cool. Well, it's time for whiskey shots or whatever drink of choice. Or just an imaginary. Go, Zach. I don't think I actually have anything over here.
I don't have whiskey in my house.
Yeah, so... which I think I told you the story, Corey, but you obviously knew Whiskey virtually.
Mm-hmm.
And we do this in honor of Whiskey when she passed last year. So when Zach gets back, we'll just do a customary to Whiskey shot. So, Zach, are you ready?
So neither of y'all have Whiskey. I'm just the alcoholic in the group.
I can get it.
If you want to wait like 45 seconds, I can go get some Whiskey.
It's fine. You don't have to.
Okay. All right. Well, to Whiskey.
To Whiskey.
And there it is. Bottoms up. Cheers. You know what I learned last night at this wedding? White Claw doesn't do shit to me. I had like 6 White Claws, and I was like, I am sober as could be.
Over what period of time? Like how long?
It was like a couple hours. I had like 5 White Claws.
Would you say it was roughly over the duration of Blade Runner?
Yes. There you go. All it did was make me feel kind of bloated. But anyway. That's it for the episode. Zach, do you want to tell us? Oh, there's Athena. There she is. You can find us. I'll do it, Zach, because I know you don't even know anymore. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at But Is It Good Podcast. You can find us on X at BIIG Podcast. If you're still on X, you can email us at But Is It Good Podcast. @gmail.com, BIIG podcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on everything at Hunter Callahan Music. Follow Zach at Zach with an H to the number, the THA future.31. Corey, what's your handle on Instagram? If you want to give it, if not, you don't have to.
It is the THE _ Grispo, GRISPO.
Yeah, give Corey a follow. Corey, thank you for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast. I love talking about, movies I love. So this was great. Thanks for having me.
We will have you back on for The Last Jedi because I just want to see you just give up on humanity.
Yeah, that's a tough one to get through.
Well, cool. That's about it. Anything else you want to add? Anybody?
I'm good.
Are you good? All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
But Is It Good Podcast? Yeah, 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 yeah.